Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talking Terps. I'm your host, Zach Kiesel, joined as always by Mike Popovic and Pat Donahue. We're going to talk Maryland football once again this week. A big win over Towson, 38-6. A lot of stuff to talk about. Definitely room for improvement, but a lot of good things that we saw as well. And we're going to look forward to Charlotte as well. So, Pat, I'll kick it off with you. General impressions from the game. What stood out to you, Maryland versus Towson?
Yeah, you know, just say kind of get your feet wet sort of game. It would have been nice to see maybe a little less sloppiness. I know we'll talk about that in terms of penalties and stuff in a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I think the big takeaways for me, or one of the biggest takeaways at least, was that Talia looked very good. Obviously not against the best competition, but he looked very comfortable, very polished, what you expect from your leader. And then, you know, just beyond that, it definitely, there are issues in the trenches, you know, not only with the penalties, but it seems like the offensive line is a little bit unsettled. Then again, this is the time to get guys reps, even if you don't think they're going to be starting. See what you have in live game action. This would be the time and the opponents do it against. So I don't want to take too many big takeaways there. I hate assessing the defense in games like this, because it feels like it can only hurt them. If they don't look good against a Towson, then we're all down their throats. If they look great against a Towson, it's to be expected. And honestly, it's hard to compare that to a good offense. So yeah, I think, you know, overall happy that they got out of there relatively healthy and with the big win. And you know, our star players looked like our star players for the most part, so that's a big positive.
And Mike, is there anything else that stood out to you? You know, luckily we found out it looks like today that injury to Talia doesn't look to be serious at all. He's pretty much 100%. His left shoulder got banged up early in this game.
Yeah, I mean, three quick things on the game. First, it reminded me a lot of the Buffalo game last year, where they started out hot on offense, then they faded, then they finished strong in the first half with that touchdown pass from Talia to Caden Prather. And at that point, I think we knew the game was out of hand. Second, Talia looked very decisive in throwing the football. You didn't have the pumps. And then the getting rid of the football that he did before in the previous season, so that was good. And then on top of that, you know, Pat, you talked about the offensive line situation, and I certainly agree with you that it's unsettled there, and they mixed a lot of guys in and out, and they used the guys at multiple positions. So I understand why they did that, trying to get guys on video, trying to see the best five that they have, but it opened itself up to risking hits on Talia, which he took too many. And then with the running game, it was not as dominant. Just in general, the trenches were not as dominant as you would have liked.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit last week about how Josh Gattis and Talia had kind of talked about an air raid element to this offense, and I feel like we definitely saw that. Now, I'm not sure how much of that was due to a little bit of a lack of success running the ball, but they definitely threw the ball a lot. Talia looked good. Like you mentioned, Mike, one thing that stood out to me was how decisive he looked throwing the football. Mm-hmm. Pat, nine different Maryland players caught passes. We saw debuts from Tyrese Chambers and Caden Prather. But where do you see the improvement coming from that group? Because one thing that stood out to me was more drops than you would have liked on easy throws. That one to Ty Felton that would have been an extra touchdown really stands out. But there were a few others as well.
Yeah, and you really hate to see drops like that against, you know, an inferior opponent. Because you would think that's when the pressure's a little less. I mean, maybe opening game jitters, who knows? But yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly a lot of improvement that can be had at that position. Obviously, Corey Dykes looked, you know, very good, very, you know, kind of continuing his momentum from last season. So it was good to see that. Jashaun Jones, we've seen a lot of him over the years. We kind of know what he is. It was nice to see, you know, Octavian Smith get some action. You know, he's our kick returner as well. He looks pretty athletic and shifty, so if they can get the ball in his hands, that could be a big plus. But yeah, I mean, overall, you want to see guys like Ty Felton and some of the other role players step up in these sort of situations and take advantage of the extra reps that they might not get later in the season. Because you never know when someone's going to go down and one of these guys are going to have to step up. So certainly some improvement to be had. And, you know, I am glad that Gattis stuck with the plan to go air raid, because that's kind of where the kinks need to be worked out more early in the season. The things need to be ironed out more so than in the backfield. So you can save those running backs, you know, for when you need them.
And one thing that I noticed, Mike, we were talking about last week when we looked at the tight ends, obviously Deitch just looked really good as we expected. We didn't really know who would step up behind him. And one thing that I noticed, even though he didn't get into the stat sheet, is as far as a blocking tight end goes, it looks like it's going to be Preston Howard, the converted quarterback from McDonough. He's been in the program a couple of years, really started as a tight end his freshman year. It looks like he's going to be the guy when they need a run blocker in there.
Yeah, I tell you, I was frantic with my notes on Saturday, just with all the different players in and out and trying to keep count of, you know, this guy got in here or they're shuffling this guy there. But you're right, Howard, one of those guys. And I did notice that in terms of the blocking aspect of it. And as Pat mentioned with Deitches, it was great to see them use him not only as a receiver, not only on regular routes, but also on screen plays as well. They really worked to get him the ball. Octavian Smith, you mentioned, he had a handoff sweep play, jet sweep play as well. So it was great to see, I think, the fact that you've got guys that can play in multiple positions there, the versatility of all these guys at various places. And I agree. I think certainly the game plan coming in was Towson. We've got to use this opportunity to throw the football, see what we have on the offensive line and pass pro against a team like likes to blitz a lot and has some big guys up front. And then with the receiving core, especially the new guys and getting mixed in and the young guys' experience. So that certainly was by design. Again, though, it opened itself up to Talia taking too many hits, unfortunately, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were definitely looking to rough him up a little bit. Most of it legally. Some of it was a little iffy, but that's what you can expect when you have a top-tier quarterback. They're going to want to hit him when he drops back to throw, and he dropped back to throw a lot. We did see them take more deep shots down the field, which is nice. Octavian Smith is kind of my breakout candidate for this year. I was really impressed with what he did last year, especially in that bowl game, that incredible catch he made for the touchdown. I think he's going to be really good this year, despite the additions of Chambers and Prather. We've talked about the offensive line a couple times already. That's really the biggest question mark coming out of this game. It seems like it was the biggest question mark coming in. It's the biggest question mark coming out. 9 different linemen that they used. They were rotating them during series, which Loxley said he is his first time ever doing. You don't like to see it. DJ Glay is really the only 100% starter that you have at left tackle. Now, Gottlieb Eadsi, it sounds like he's going to come back for this Charlotte game, which is good. He was injured week 1.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like he's going to be the starting right tackle. Mike, how big a concern is the offensive line still for you, and how confident are you that they can find 5 guys going into that game in 2 weeks against Virginia?
Well, on the one hand, I'm glad that they have the schedule that allows them to do this to a certain extent. It is concerning. Now, the only question I have, though, is that are they doing this as well, or did they do what they did against Towson for as much to try to cross-train guys and see how much versatility the guys have in addition to where they may be slotted in? How much of it was they truly don't have a starting 5 yet? How much of it was we want to get the backup some more experience? We want to cross-train guys. You know, what's the percentage balance on that? It does seem to appear, though, and Loxley did say they're looking to find their best 5. Okay, what's the criteria for that? But sure, it opens itself up, no question, to having concern there. You know, only they know ultimately how much, you know, internally, how much concern there should be and how much there shouldn't be. I do think some of it, though, was just trying to cross-train guys and get guys experience early, because once the Big Ten games start, those backups are not going to get that kind of playing time.
Yeah, and Pat, you know, like I said, we saw 9 guys. It does sound like, you know, Loxley addressed the media today. It sounds like they might try to use fewer guys this week. If you get Eadsi back, obviously that shores up one spot at right tackle. But it will be interesting to watch this week. Charlotte, and we'll dig into them a little bit later, their pass defense is their biggest weakness. It was one of the worst, if not the worst, in the country of all D1 teams last year. They lost a bunch of guys in their secondary for this year. We might see them throw the ball a lot again just to take advantage of that. But would you like to see them run the ball a little bit more just to see what they have?
I would. And if for no other reason other than the fact that to protect Talia a little bit more. I mean, I know he was only sacked one time, but he was hit a bunch. And it's a long season. You don't want to have him taking these big hits against these smaller schools. So, and I mean, we know Biff Poggi. We know he's an aggressive style coach, wants to run the ball and play tough defense. So I think he's going to be, you know, telling them to pin their ears back and hit Talia every chance they can. So, as he should. So, yeah, I would like to see, even though the secondary might be Charlotte's weakness, take advantage of that where you can, but I would like to see us, run the ball a little bit more too, and show what we have there and get, you know, that aspect of our team going a little bit more. I tend to agree with Mike. I think, you know, I think the shuffling of the offensive line is a little bit more to get guys reps and to cross train a little bit, as opposed to Brian Braswell being unsure of who his best guys are. There may be one or two spots that are still kind of open in his mind, but I think, you know, you get the right tackle back, you already have left tackle shored up. It's coming together, and I think that the priority number one against these teams, who really their only chance of winning these games is if Talia gets knocked out of the game. So I think you really have to do what you can to not show your best stuff, you know, to the rest of the Big Ten, and also protect your quarterback and get out of these games with a win. Don't worry about covering some 30-point spread or whatever.
And Zach, if I just may interject here in terms of the game plans and throwing the football as compared to running the football. Now, obviously, Tennessee is a top 15 team in the country, but just taking a look at their matchup against Virginia week one, and they're a team that wants to throw the ball more than run the football. But under Josh Heupel as their new head coach, second year head coach, but they threw the football 33 times. They ran the football, though, against Virginia to the tune of 52 times for 287 yards and 5 touchdowns. So the opportunity to run the football will come in week 3. You talked about Charlotte's personnel in the matchup there and the opportunity, again, for Maryland's offensive line to get work in and pass pro, and for the receivers to get comfortable and playing in multiple spots, which they have them doing. Yeah, the opportunity, though, to maybe work on the run game more might come against Virginia than this coming Saturday, obviously.
And as a final note, just talking about the offense from what we saw against Towson, I was really impressed with what I saw from Cam Edge. Obviously, only made 3 throws, but arm looked really strong. And it really seems like that extra year that he spent in the program after reclassifying has helped. And you look at next year, obviously, Talia is going to be gone. You're looking at Billy Edwards versus Cam Edge, and obviously you have other guys like Jaden Saure and Champ Long in the program right now, but it does seem like those two guys, and I mean, Cam Edge, if he keeps performing like this, he may get a chance to be the clear number two this year. So, Mike, I know you're a little bit familiar with his game, having come from, Smyrna up in Delaware.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big deal when he committed. He was a 4-star before he reclassified a year early. He was bumped down to a 3 because he was only 17, but a guy that could really make a difference for the program.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm curious in practice. And again, these guys are not getting very many, if any, reps with the first team. Edwards might be getting a little bit. Edge is probably getting none. But it is curious to see in terms of, is there still kind of a competition in terms of the second team between those two? Is that locked in? Edwards did not have a good day throwing the football. I don't think that was all his fault. But I do like what Edge brings to the table. And watching him a little bit in his high school and coming from a very good program in Smyrna under head coach Mike Judy, he is very intriguing and very well could be a guy that I would expect would compete for the job next year. But it's good to know that you've got a guy that, you know, if Edwards throwing the football can't get it done, if God forbid Talia goes down, you may have two guys that could work in there and help you along as best as possible.
Yeah, better than it was last year when it was Billy or nothing. And we really didn't know what we had in Billy before he got into the game against Indiana. Switching over to the defensive side, Pat, you mentioned you can't really take much away from a game against an FCS opponent from a defensive standpoint. They only allow two field goals, which is obviously good. They haven't allowed a touchdown since last mid-November against Ohio State, which is an impressive stat. Not so much for this opponent, but more for how they finished last year. But was there anything that stood out to you, either from a personnel standpoint, a scheme standpoint, in this game against Towson from the defense?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough to pull too much away from it. I'm sure they weren't showing too much either. But I do think, well, I guess I'll start with the negative and end positively. Even though Towson didn't have a lot of explosive plays, and it was nice to see the limiting of that, it did seem like they were getting, especially on the ground, chunks here and there that were a little bit bigger than you would expect. You know, Maryland didn't always seem like the bigger, more athletic, stronger team as they should have, resoundingly. So that was a little concerning, because when we get into Big Ten play, we'll see how that fares. But, you know, I think the secondary looked as good as you'd expect them to. It's not like Towson had any luck throwing the ball or had anywhere to go with the ball. So, yeah, I would just say, you know, slightly concerned about the physicality of the front seven. But overall, you know, they came out healthy, and, you know, Bo Braid's still a ball hawk, and you know, no one really made a fool of themselves. So, that's good.
Yeah, no turnovers forced, but no turnovers committed. Weirdly clean that standpoint for a week one game.
Right. But you would like to see them maybe get a turnover or two against Towson, but it was just kind of like, it almost seemed like they were there to just, like I say, not show too much, not get anyone hurt, but also not let up touchdowns, a little bit bend, don't break type of defense in week one. And, you know, they were able to do that.
Yeah, Mike, the longest pass play Towson had was a 24-yarder, and their longest run was a 17-yarder from the quarterback. So at least limiting the really big explosive plays, it's what you expect against a team like Towson, but it was good to see them actually do it.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I also agree also on the defensive side that you didn't have the domination there that you would have liked, but handed to the secondary, they locked down on their receivers. I thought Nathan Kent was pressured certainly a fair amount, so that's where it could be deceiving that, oh, well, you only had two sacks in the game, but he got pressured enough, and yeah, it was a solid but not spectacular type game. Again, they rotated a lot of guys in at linebacker as well. Some guys playing the outside that will be mixed in this season that I didn't necessarily expect to see as much. I think one of the kids from Havre de Grace, actually, so they got a lot of local guys that mixed in and out of there. But, yeah, I mean, look, three straight games, and that's the first time since 76 that a Maryland defense has shut out an opponent for three straight games. Now, of course, in this case, you have to go back to last year to, I guess, the last year, Rutgers and NC State. And then you include this game against Towson, but that's still impressive. And Brian Stort runs multiple defense, and you know, we could talk about the offensive line, but there are some guys on that defensive line that also, there are big expectations that they need to really step up this year and have a season. Fuller being one of them.
Yeah, we talked about Jordan Phillips last week, and I was I was impressed with what I saw week one, and we'll see. He's a young kid, obviously redshirt freshman. He looked good, and he's going to play a really big role this year, especially once we get to Big Ten play. Touching on the special teams real quick, we didn't really know what to expect from kicker. Jack Howes did see most of the time, but he did miss a 45-yarder. Had the leg, but just pulled it. Evan Johnson, though, came in, transfer from Michigan State, made a 24-yarder late in the game. I mean, do we think, Pat, we might see a competition? Is this something that we think is ongoing throughout the year?
Could be fun to have a little competition there for a little bit. I hate to see it not get settled at any point, but, you know, you can't necessarily bench a kid for missing a 45-yarder, especially when it had enough leg. You know, you give him, if he was the incumbent, if they wanted to give him the first crack, you keep him there, you see how he does, but keep him on a short leash. It's good that there is still competition there, someone who's got Big Ten pedigree and obviously has a pretty good leg himself. So, yeah, we'll see how it pans out. Just hopefully one of them can rise to the top.
And Howes did
Spangler's make a start.
He is. Yeah. Averaged just under 50 yards a punt, pinned one inside the 20. That's a huge weapon. I feel like it's so underrated. And Maryland, they've had some good punters in the past. In the last few years between Spangler and then Pecorella, they've been really good. And it's helped them stay in a lot of these games, these Big Ten defensive battles when you need to be able to flip the field. that's a big deal. And Spangler's legit.
Well, and you know, these guys in football as well, we think about analytics in baseball, but football uses analytics as well. And you're absolutely right, Zach, when you think about field position. And of course, they've got the breakdown of, you know, the percentage of teams that score, whether it be field goals or touchdowns when they start at, you know, this yard line and this yard line and this yard line. So obviously there are targets where you'd like to have a punter that can give you X opportunity here to keep an offense within X percentage of having a chance to score, you know, on every series. Again, depending on the field position where the punter's, you know, punting from, whether he's punting from, you know, their own 30 or the goal line, it's obviously a big difference there. But you're absolutely right. Those are, I guess, hidden yards, as they say, too, when you think about special teams, which is often forgotten about, but very important.
Yeah, so let's switch over and look at Charlotte. That's who Maryland's going to be playing on Saturday night, a weird primetime matchup against a not-so-great school, and it's on NBC, the Big Ten's new TV deal in full effect. But at least I guess the whole country gets to watch Talia. That's exciting. They'll also get to see Biff Poggi, who I guess is still wearing cutoff T-shirts and shorts on the sideline, which is, I think it's great. I think it's a fantastic fashion statement. I think Kevin Willard should come out on the basketball court looking like that or something. But Charlotte won their first game 24-3. South Carolina State, so not much to take from that. Maryland won the game down in the Queen City last year, 56-21. Big passing day, as we mentioned. Charlotte's pass defense was really bad last year. Mike, I know you have a lot of insight on Biff Poggi from his days at Gilman, St. Francis, Michigan. And then you played against him. When did that happen? High school?
So when he took over, yeah, I mean, when I say I played, when he coached, I played against his Gilman team in my senior year. I think was his first year at Gilman, if memory serves. Yeah, because I think Sherman Bristow was in his last year at Gilman, my junior year. So we played against his program in 97, and instantaneously, you know, that program was a lot better, and they got some kids in there. I mean, he did a fantastic job building that program. And the thing that I'll say that I noticed is that his teams, in terms of success, they were teams on the field. They were always well-disciplined. They treated the other team with respect. They ran the program, I think, the right way. What happened to Gilman, though, quite honestly, is that there were enough graduates and donors that had felt like that the school had become too much of a football factory, though, that it had gone too far. And my understanding is a year or two before he left to go to St. Francis, he was already donating money to St. Francis. Now, I don't know what sparked that necessarily. I don't know if he was kind of paving the way for him to go there in the first place, or if that was just generosity. He's made money for himself. His wife, though, his wife's family has a lot of money. He put a lot of money into Gilman. He's put a lot more money into St. Francis. Now, he's not supposed to be doing that now because he's coaching at the collegiate ranks. But that's why I ended up leaving Gilman. He goes to St. Francis, where they pretty much opened the doors and said, look, this is an opportunity for us at a struggling school in terms of size and where we're located to be able to help ourselves out financially and make ourselves a big name. And so they decided to go down that route. You know, in some ways, kind of like Colorado's done with Deion Sanders. So, you know, Gilman just decided that they didn't quite want to be the football, as much of a football powerhouse as they were. They wanted academics to come back into the fray a little bit more and have some balance there. So he goes to St. Francis, and he's made that obviously not just a state, a top state program, but that's a nationwide program now. He goes to Michigan. Jim Harbaugh talked very highly of him as being someone that offered good advice, someone to bounce things off of. And no surprise, he goes to Charlotte. And, of course, he's going to be recruiting the state of Maryland like crazy going forward here.
Yeah, I mean, he's already grabbed a number of players from the DMV. I know Austin Fontaine is on their roster, the transfer from Maryland. They're starting running back Darrell Robinson as a St. Francis kid, a freshman. He looks to be really one of their best offensive weapons. Pat, the Maryland connections with Charlotte run pretty deep. Mike Miller, the former co-offensive coordinator, tight ends coach from Maryland, he went down there. He's now their offensive coordinator. How important is that familiarity, and does it benefit one team or the other?
Yeah, I think when you talk about these type of familiarities between teams, they get a little bit overblown each time. But I do think in this instance, it does help Charlotte a little bit more than it helps Maryland. I doubt, you know, Maryland is going to deviate from its plan based off of what it thinks of any of Charlotte's personnel, really, coaching or players. And I think that, you know, obviously Mike Miller, when he was here at Maryland, he was probably taking more orders than he's, you know, giving now. He's, you know, been able to probably have his thumbprint or his fingerprints on the Charlotte program a little bit more. So it's not like they necessarily know everything he's going to do or everything he has up his sleeve, but he might know a thing or two about Moxley or know a thing or two about our assistant coaches that could maybe help Charlotte put a little wrinkle in. But then at the same time, you know, what is a little wrinkle going to help a team that's 30-plus point underdog? So that's why I say it doesn't – I don't think the familiarity overall is a huge factor. I think that it will motivate the Charlotte players and the Charlotte coaching staff who have that familiarity and those roots to the DMV more. And I think that Maryland has to watch out for that, and this could turn into a closer game than the spread indicates. But I don't think Maryland should or is in any jeopardy of losing this game. But I do think they should be ready for a rock fight, at least early, from a team whose coach knows how to rally the troops and who will be very motivated to win this game to make a statement in his home, you know, state. And Maryland certainly has to be ready for that and be ready to stop the run, because that's clearly what Charlotte and Biff Poggi has always wanted to do.
And this is a Charlotte program with a ton of energy right now. It's a young program. I mean, what, 9 years old? I mean, that they've been playing football. Their program was canceled back in like World War II times. And they just restarted it less than 10 years ago. They've got a ton of energy around the program. They sold out their first game of this season. Jalen Jones is their new quarterback. Chris Reynolds was at the program for a long time, set a lot of records. He's a dual threat. Jones is. He struggled in the opener, threw for 125 yards, two picks, did run for a touchdown, didn't cost him ultimately, but he didn't have his best game. Mike, we talked about Maryland's defensive line and not really knowing what we have from them yet. Nathan Kent, not much of a runner, although he is relatively mobile, not like Jones is. So this will be a test for that defensive line. They're going to see some mobile quarterbacks this year, and this is one of the first.
Well, and anytime you get penetration early on, that disrupts a play. And in terms of dropping back to pass, the worst pass rush is right up the middle on you. So you're going to want to see them take a step forward and be more dominant this week than what you saw against Towson. But ultimately, you want to keep them out of the end zone. That's what matters the most. But yes, you're expecting this defensive line to be a factor and for some of these big names to really make their presence known. That's an area, again, we'll be watching. We can talk about O-line, but that D-line is just as important in terms of taking a look at it and having our sights set on, okay, the success of this team is going to be largely determined by the D-line as much as the O-line, frankly, although I guess because Talia is on the offensive side, we give that nod to the O side of things. You know, just quickly, it's interesting because with Miller, you know, and Miller took the job, I think, even before the bowl game. So he took the job at Charlotte in December. If he had known that Dan Enos was going to leave for Arkansas, he may be the Terps new offensive coordinator this year instead of Josh Gavis.
Yeah, and look, Pat, you mentioned Biff wants to run the ball. He wants to stop the run. They definitely want to run the ball. As I mentioned, Robinson's probably their best offensive weapon, the running back. That's going to be another test for this defensive line. Can you stop the run? Because Towson didn't have a ton of success last week, but this is a step up in competition. It's a step up in linemen, step up in running back. So it's going to be a big test because they obviously need to be able to do that once Big Ten play starts rolling around.
Yeah, this is definitely a slight step up from Towson, and some, you know, if there's something that you can take away defensively from this matchup, it should be that, you know, can Maryland stop the run of a team that obviously wants to run, and that's their biggest strength, and that's, you know, they know it's coming. Can they stop it? If you know it's coming and you can't stop it, sound the alarms. That could be a real sign for concern there. So, yeah, that'll be definitely, if you're looking at like keys to the game or things to watch on the defensive side of the ball, I would say that's a good
one. Yeah, let's hope we see a lot more of Jordan Phillips this week. If he keeps splashing on the screen, they shouldn't have much success running the football.
Nope, that's a big boy.
Yeah, absolutely. Maryland, right now I see them as 24.5-point favorites at home against Charlotte. Pat, do you think they cover?
No, I just wrote down, I was just looking at it. I think they're going to win 33-10 and just miss out on the cover. But which I think, I forget exactly what the spread was last week, but I think it might have been 32.5 and they got hooked.
They did not cover last week. It was close.
Yeah, so whoever took Maryland to cover, they got hooked. So
yes.
Sorry for anyone who is crazy enough to lay 32.5 points in any sport. But sure, yeah, I think that because Maryland is still clearly tinkering with some things and still getting some guys reps, still trying to iron some things out, also trying to keep probably some things close to the vest before Big Ten play and before a big game against Virginia the following week. And because, like I mentioned before, Charlotte will be as motivated as any, what do you call it, group of five, whatever, smaller schools. Because they're FBS, right? They're not FCS. Yeah, so... yeah, I think just because of all those factors, they can keep it relatively close, 33-10, book it.
Mike, you think they cover?
You know, I'm going to say yes, and I understand what Pat's saying, and I was thinking along those same lines earlier because of all the interchanging of parts, especially on the offensive line, that it, that makes that point spread or that puts that point spread in peril. But the one thing I think, Pat, though, conversely, you got to take a look at is two things. One is that, okay, that was Maryland's first game. They don't get preseason games in college, so they get the rust off. Like, that's kind of like a preseason game, if you will. Yeah, Charlotte will be highly motivated, especially early on, but that also could raise the level of play for Maryland as well. Let's not forget that. Thirdly, good teams take care of business against teams that they should. And, you know, that's something I'm sure that Mike Loxley's preaching to them as well. And then fourth, let's not undersell, though, and Loxley mentioned this before the Towson game, Towson on that offensive line had several 300-pound guys. They had a lot of size on their O-line and their D-line to some extent as well. So while Charlotte may be a step up, they did not face a small line in the Towson Tigers. So that may be helpful going into this game, that it was more challenging maybe in the trenches than it might normally be against an FCS team, against an FBS team. So I'm going to say they covered. I'm not going to say they covered by a lot. But they take care of business here. But you guys talked about it with the run game. That'll be the area to watch. And I would tend to think that a guy like Bo Braid may have a big day making tackles at the strong safety position.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Mike. I was going back and forth and thinking about it more. I do think they cover. I think, like you said, the rust is knocked off. Don't forget, Ty Felton catches that ball that he should have had. Maryland probably covers against Towson. And it's a much different final score than it was. They're in the 40s scoring the football. So I think that I think Charlotte's pass defense is so horrendous. I mean, it was one of the worst in football, in college football last year. And they lost a lot of those guys. So they're playing even different guys from the awful pass defense last year. So I think that's going to be an opportunity for Talia to make some really big throws down the field. I think 1 week under his belt with guys like Chambers and Prather, who are new to the system, I think it's going to be a big day for him. I think he goes well over 400 yards, probably gets out of the game before the fourth quarter, hopefully. But I think that's a reasonable assumption. And I think Charlotte's offense, I mean, I don't know if they're worse than Towson, but I don't know that they're a whole lot better. I don't think they present much of a challenge for Maryland's defense. And I think this may be a week that you see some turnovers. I talked about Jalen Jones, Charlotte's quarterback, 2 picks last week. So there's some opportunities for these DBs to get their first interceptions of the year on the board. So that's all. That's, I think, all we have for as far as a preview. Pat, I know you are working up a piece on Biff Poggi to put on the site.
Yep. Almost done it. So hopefully have it ready for tomorrow at some point. And we'll dive in a little bit more to who is Biff Poggi and how'd he find his way from Baltimore to Charlotte. Now and back
why,
to college.
Are you going to answer the question as to why he still wears cutoff sleeves on the side?
You know, I am history? One of my sources that I was using. I don't know if it dug into why, but it dug into the fact and kind of the viral reaction a little bit more. So it might get incorporated into the story somewhat. I'm certainly intrigued by that aspect and by the character that is Biff Poggi. It's different. Altogether. I want to learn more about his hedge fund and how he got all his millions. That's what I want to learn.
Well, don't forget, too, his wife is a Weyerhaeuser, so she comes from a lot of money, too.
Yeah.
That hasn't hurt. But it's amazing. Somebody has that much money, and he is very much, at least on the sidelines, comes off as a very blue-collar guy.
He can't afford sleeves, guys.
Coaching. Yeah.
He's so poor, he can't afford sleeves.
Yeah, apparently.
No, rich people are penny pinchers. They got rich for a reason.
He put all his money into St. Francis, so he can't afford sleeves anymore. So, you know, it's but that
is to wear a state-issued t-shirt, and it's got to be cut off.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I might interject just real quickly. Remember last year in the Charlotte game down at Charlotte in that first quarter, Maryland's defense struggled in that game. Now, it's a brand new Charlotte team. Maryland's had a couple of DBs graduate to the NFL, but that was not one of their better games. So at least early on, and then the defense settled in, it was fine. So I'm sure that Stewart has to look at that, or Williams has to look at that and say, hey, let's not forget the first quarter last year defense. We need to do a lot better out of the gates than what we did down at Charlotte in the first quarter of 22.
Yeah, it was a much more experienced quarterback for Charlotte, too. Chris Reynolds had been in the program for 5 years.
And that's fair as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mike, I know you've had a couple articles up on the site in the last week. Can you break those down for us? What can people expect when they go to BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com?
Well, one of the things that the first story had to do with just talking about the Terps coming into the season and can they make it three in a row? They have not had three straight winning seasons since 01 through 03 when Ralph Regan started his coaching career at Maryland as the head coach, that is, I should say. So can they make it three in a row? And is this year easier, harder, or the same as last year in being able to attain that? So I go through that a bit. And then I also give a capsule on all 13 other Big Ten teams in terms of a little bit about them and what's expected for this season. For instance, with Ohio State, they're breaking in a new quarterback. Wisconsin supposed to be running the air raid, although ironically enough, it's their run game again that ended up being a big part of their success in beating Buffalo, who Maryland played last year in Wisconsin's first game. So I've got some bios and capsules on that. And then I just had a bunch of notes and observations from the Maryland Towson game from Saturday that I did up as my second piece.
Awesome. So be sure to check all those out, BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. I'll have my weekly preview of Charlotte up on Thursday. I'll definitely link Pat's article about Biff Poggi on that one. So between the two of those should give you a good idea of what to expect from Charlotte this weekend. Join the conversation on the message boards, BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. Follow us on Twitter at TalkingTerpsBSL. And until next week, go Terps, roll Terps, beat Charlotte.